Well, we hear a lot about the deficit, and we're going to hear more about it as Joe Hockey prepares to deliver his first budget in a couple of months. Did you know we have a tourism deficit? And it's getting worse. There you go. That's something that doesn't get spoken about enough. In December, the number of Aussies that were heading overseas on holidays exceeded the number of tourist arrivals by a record 219,000. High Australian dollar, I got a feeling. Andrew Horden joins us now, regional economist, IMA Asia. Do you go away for the holidays, Andrew?
I went away last November to New Zealand, and it was very nice and
so
very gorgeous. So
you're part of the problem. You are part of the problem.
Let's be honest, we're all part of the problem.
No, I mean, just you at this stage.
Just me, okay. Yep. So when was the last time you went overseas? Well, you know, but I think I've seen you doing interviews in Indonesia and other countries.
Yeah, we've got to move on. So Chinese tourist numbers, I'm told, are particularly the issue. Is that right?
Yes, this is not really an Australian issue, but it's something we're seeing across the region. In the fourth quarter of 2013, we saw that the tourism numbers, which have been growing really fast over the last couple of years, though are really the saving grace of our tourism industry, because all the other countries, because of the recent financial troubles and the fact of the high dollar, they were keeping away. But the Chinese tourists were keeping on coming to Australia. It grew 19% in the first three quarters of the year and then suddenly fell away by 1.5% in Q4. And this drop, which we saw in Australia, was in Australia, but there was a drop also in New Zealand. Growth rates fell all across Asia, down by over 20% in some countries. And it was just like a massive drop that came all the way through.
Is that really just the dollar?
The reason what was happening here was that the Chinese government actually put in some new laws which changed how much it cost Chinese tourists to come to Australia. Australia and everywhere else. Previously, what they'd do is they'd sign up on these special tours, and what the tour would be, you get in the bus, and I'm sure plenty of people have seen these buses around, and the bus takes you to certain mandatory shopping spots where you're sort of left there for 20 to 30 minutes. I was on some of these tours in China when I was living there for a while, and they sort of leave you there, and you're expected to buy some of the gems and the jade, etc., then you go on to the next stop. But the Chinese government has said, no, you can't do this anymore. You can't subsidise your trips by making them go to these shopping tour spots. So all the tours to different countries have gone up by about 30 to 50%. So the Chinese tourists have gone, think we'll have a bit of a break for a while. So that's what we're seeing across the region.
Right. So this kind of, cross-promotion of shunting tourists into places where they might have to buy stuff that they don't particularly want to buy, that was kind of subsidising these tours. Is that the idea?
And now that it was subsidising the tours, but we're hopeful that in the next six to eight months, I mean, this thing will recover. I mean, once the Chinese tourists realise that the money they'll save, whilst they have to pay more for the tour, they'll save money by not having to be shunted to these expensive shops and being able to go to the shops they want and get better deals, etc. Mm. We think that the Chinese tourists will pick up around the region.
Where are they going?
At the moment, they're more staying home in terms of this sort of thing. They're just not travelling overseas and taking advantage of these cheap tours. And I mean, because you can see it, they're just going nowhere at the moment. They're just more being stationary. They did travel more on Chinese New Year, but that's a traditional thing which happens each year because their workers, unlike us with the 4 weeks annual leave, get 0 weeks annual leave and just have a few days here and there. So they all have to go travelling there. We're more after the high-end people, the ones who can travel whenever they like. They're the people who we try to get down to Australia.
So the Chinese middle class, this emerging middle class that everyone salivates over when they talk about the Asian century.
Indeed. People over $20,000 or families over $50,000, generally the levels we're trying to get people into the country.
Yeah, right. Okay. But there is an issue, though, with tourism in Australia just being so expensive, isn't there? I mean, my daughter has developed very recently a fascination with the Great Barrier Reef. And I've never been there in my life, and I really thought this would be great, really good thing to do. And we started looking into it. And by the time you added it up, it just got to the point where, you really could go overseas for less.
I must admit, Waleed, I'm in exactly the same boat. I have an American wife, and she's very interested to see as much of Australia as possible, and we've seen a fair bit of the down south, but we wanted to go up to Kakadu. And we just started looking into the costs, and it was amazing how much it actually cost to go to these places. And I'm sure that you could take your daughter and you could go into the Philippines and see some very nice places for about the same cost, possibly a bit cheaper, and other regions. I mean, it is such an issue. The good thing is, though, that we do still seem to have things which do bring people to Australia around. Whereas we go flying overseas, we can see that, and now just as the global economy is starting to recover, we're starting to get the tourists coming back from the US and Canada, the UK and Germany. So the pull to Australia is still quite strong. And I was just looking at a survey. The most popular destination to go for Chinese tourists is Australia. So there is the magnetism of Australia, and maybe they like the idea that we're this rich, high-end country, but it definitely has a strong pull. And we, even though we want to go elsewhere, people do want to come here.
I'd love to keep talking holidays, but there are probably other issues that we should look at. In particular, this argument that now seems to have erupted over what is really causing us to be uncompetitive in certain industries, car manufacturing being the most obvious recent example. And this debate where it seems that the government wants to blame flagging productivity and workers' conditions and wages, and the opposition sort of saying it's not about that at all, it's about your refusal to help the industry out and so on. Can you just put this to bed, Andrew? Can you say something right now that means this debate's all over and we can just move on with the truth?
Sure. Well, I'll say something and then we just won't discuss it any further.
Okay,
I think
good.
That's a good way of going about it.
Clearly, the
wages are very high in Australia, and this is one issue which we'll need to move and cross into different areas, etc. But one thing which I was interested to pick up on is a lot of people have been talking about that our labour productivity has been very low in the last few years, and this has been part of the problem. The whole thing is labour productivity in Australia has been about 1% to 2%, which is a bit lower than it's been in the past, maybe up to 2% to 3%. But, I mean, that's a difference of about 1% a year. The Australian dollar jumping 20 to 30% over the last 5 years has had a far greater effect than anything in relation to that. So it's the wage costs may have gone up a bit, but it's because of the, when you convert it into the US dollars, it's so much more, it's been more the issue. One other issue which has been ignored a fair bit is the idea that because businesses have had such a tough time with the Australian dollar, previously, how they stayed competitive before was they bought lots of, they invested in themselves, they went into research and development, they bought more capital goods in order to boost their productivity. But from about the last 6 or 7 years, they stopped because the dollar was so high and they were just trying to cut costs. And they've been, capital productivity has been decreasing by 2 to 3% a year. So while labour might be down 1% a year, capital productivity is down 2 to 3% a year. And year after year, that just keeps building up and makes us more uncompetitive.
So this is on top of the economies of scale problem.
Yeah, economies of scale and just the ability to produce high enough quality goods as well to justify our high wages.
But that's what happens, right? Because that is the economies of scale problem, isn't it? Unless I've got this wrong. Because the fact that our market is small means that, you know, the proportional investment you have to put into capital to do that high-end stuff is just so much higher. If you had a monstrously enormous market, that capital investment is much easier to justify.
Yeah, indeed. Because we're a smaller market, we do need to go to the higher end in order to justify it.
So yes, what can we do? Because, I mean, if you want to compete on wages, we've got no hope. I mean,
no.
Compared to Asia, I mean, you could strike the most unbelievable agreement with the union you want, but I just don't see how we'd be competitive next to, or in our region.
I mean, that's when it really comes down to it, we're not going to solve this by wages in the sense of things. We can talk about union conditions, etc., but it's not going to have a huge impact. The things which will help us will be the invisible hand of the market. And how dare I say that? But the idea that the Australian dollar coming down will help businesses get onto a better footing, allow them to export more, which will encourage them to invest and build things on, etc. I mean, it seems that the Australian government has decided that they don't want to go into too much subsidising investment and getting companies in to invest too much, other than the original things which they have in place. So I think it's going to be a case of trying to hope that the invisible hand of the market drops the currency, makes firms more profitable, encourages them to invest.
Well, it's going up at the moment. We'll see whether that's just a blip or a reversal of the trend that we saw at the end of last year.
Fingers crossed it goes down. I think that the quantitative easing which goes on in the US and the way they bring that back over the next little while should see the currency falling towards 85 to 80 US cents by the end of the year.
Yeah, fingers crossed, especially if you're in tourism, which brings us back to where we started. And I'll admit, Andrew, okay, but I don't think it was Indonesian TV. It might have been Jordanian TV. Yeah, sorry. Thank you very much for your time.
No worries.
I'll get out of it before I get in any more trouble. Andrew Horton, regional economist with IMA Asia. It's coming up to 10 minutes to 7.